They.
Mm.
This.
Mm.
May.
Mm.
Be.
Mm.
The.
Mm.
Show right now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
G, R, F, feel, free, to, C, come, CO, N, T, I, continue, to, A, argue, after the show starts.
After the show starts?
After the show starts, yeah.
Are you
going to
argue, Marty?
No. If I'm forced to be apart, I'll just go out front. If I don't feel.
Oh. Okay. You can do it and now before the camera starts, because once the camera starts, you're stuck here.
But now I have a nose in here. You don't want the nose to take over the show.
If you are going, you need to go now.
What, so whoever shows up, if we'd have come with four people, everyone would have to be in the show.
Okay, so that means he's not going, Frank, because the show started already. T, haven't we started? Yeah,
no,
we've been going for a while.
Yeah. I'll just be in the front.
You, he, J, you, just, C, was, the, S, T, A, R, star of the show. He was just the start of the show. He was just the star of the show just now.
I guess that's true. Made a scene, as he likes to do oftentimes.
How?
How? How is he stubborn?
Well, you said he makes a scene as he likes to do oftentimes. How? Should we shut him off? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
He's very stubborn when it comes to things. He wants things a certain way all the time, and if things aren't planned out, he's hesitant to be a part of things. So, but he's an interesting guy. He's actually a professional screenwriter, and he's been working in the business for a number of years, but he's very creative, very bright, intellectual guy, but he's kind of stubborn and put off at times.
And put off what?
He's put off if he's kind of hesitant to be involved in things. So.
The one in the front, too, Mikey. Yeah. When? What? Have? You? What has he? What has he written?
He works a lot with Gary Marshall, and he's worked on, he's a rewriter for movies, and he's worked on movies like Pretty Woman, The Princess Diaries, basically every film that Gary Marshall done in the past 20 years he's been involved in.
That explains what, Gary Marshall's movies or him? Him. How? Did we meet? How did you and Billy meet?
How did we meet? I'm not exactly sure. I think I might have submitted some artwork, because I'm an artist, to some zines, like Zen Baby. Are you familiar with that, Zen Baby? And I think maybe you sent me an email from based off of that. I can't exactly remember how we contacted each other, actually. Yeah, Christopher Robin, right.
Zen Baby. Mm. You? S. E. Sent. Me. An email?
That could be the case. That could be the case. I can't remember, actually. My memory's not as good as it used to be. So I'm not exactly sure.
O. F. Offering. Your. S. D. E. S. Design. Work. No, designs. S. E. R. Services.
Am I offering my design services?
You did, Frank said.
Oh,
that
I
was
did.
The initial email after Christopher told you about
yeah,
us.
Yeah, that's probably the case, because I'm a professional ad designer. It's what I do. I do graphic design and yellow page ads and websites and commercial stuff. So yeah, that's my real job for now.
And B E. Because, one, we don't do ads, and two, Mikey is a graphic designer,
oh.
Two, but I... S. A. Saw. You. Were. A. A. An actor.
Mm-hmm, that's correct. Yeah, I've been an actor for a number of years. I've actually, for many years up in San Francisco, I was auditioning for commercials. And I did commercials with Steve Young. I did stuff for Toyota, for Sunny Delight. Levi's, basically just all commercial type work. Then I did a little bit of, I did some auditions for films like Bandits and Mumford. That was a Disney movie. So I did it professionally for quite a while. And then after 9/11, the 9/11 thing happened, the market sort of dried up. And then I kind of took a step back and started writing screenplays after that.
How? Why did the market dry up after 9/11?
Basically, advertisers just weren't willing to put any money out there. Everything, it was the whole, I think, just everything became a fear-based thing. Like, we don't know what's happening with the economy. And so the whole industry kind of shut down because companies didn't know what was going to be happening with things. So the whole market sort of shifted and dried up, at least in this area. In LA, it slowed down a little bit too, but not nearly as much as here because this market is so small. So 9/11 for me was bad, and it still is bad, and I have a lot of serious issues in regards to what happened with 9/11, and I don't know what your political stance is in regards to Bush or 9/11, but to me
have you checked out Frank's running for president?
I have not seen that, no.
He has a platform. How about L? Have you checked out Lover?
I've seen the website. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like the way it was laid out. It was nice.
The content?
I haven't had a chance to really go deep in the content, unfortunately. So I don't know much of what your political stance is.
How about E-R Aeroplay? Did you check out Aeroplay?
I'm not familiar with.
That's Frank's website for his art.
Oh, okay.
It's linked from Lover.
Uh-huh.
L. U. Lover.org. Did you check that out at all?
Isn't that your main
this is
website?
Lover.com.
Oh, .org. I have not
Lover.
Seen.
Lover.org no. is our alternative news website.
Oh, I have not
website.
Seen that.
S. So, A, S, as, A, C, T. So as an actor, do, you, P, R, E, prepare?
Do I prepare? Actually, not really, no. I mean, for me, it's like, I show up and do the lines. I don't really like to rehearse. I don't really like to, I feel like it's more organic if you just show up and actually do the thing than...
Me too.
Yeah? Yeah, I feel it's much more, I mean, especially when you're doing commercials or even small roles, it's like, there's no reason to rehearse, I mean, to memorize every single line, because then you just ruin it. It becomes stale, it becomes stagnant, so... But I've done theater too and played lead roles in theater. And with that, it's a little different. It's like you memorize the lines, but then you know the lines almost so well that you can play with it and you can kind of like improv to a certain extent. Each performance is different.
Do you like M2I improv?
I don't like it, actually. I did a little bit of it, and it just feel like, to me, I mean, it's interesting and kind of fun, because it's like they set rules for it, you know, these are the rules of the improv, and you go in there and you do it, and I don't know, it's kind of interesting, and some people are great at it, but, I mean, for me, doing
what?
It just never really turned
what
me
are
on.
The rules? What are, is that it? You're asking
well,
what
Well, some
are the
of
rules?
The rules are, in improv, it's, you know, whatever the scene is, you never want to create a conflict, so if somebody comes up with an idea and says a certain line, you want to keep building upon it. So it's always based on, like, going with that same idea. You never stop the flow of the improv by creating a conflict, basically. So it's always like, if you say, oh, you know, we're out here paddling in a boat or whatever, the other person is supposed to go along with it and add to it. You don't say, no, we're actually doing this. Or basically, it's just like you're building a house. It's like in each person in the improv is like building a piece of the house to create whatever the skit is.
And why don't you like it?
I mean, it's interesting to watch, but I mean, I just it never really does anything for me. I mean, I see some people that are really great at improv, and that's kind of fun. But for the most part, when I go to shows and stuff, I just feel like it just isn't really an art form to me. I don't know. It's not really that interesting to me. I mean, I've also done stand-up comedy, too, so I think maybe because of that, I have a different outlook on improv. I think stand-up comedy, for me, is more interesting.
R-E-A. Really? That is not what I call improv. What is not what you call improv? The not the stand-up comedy, but the way you describe the improv isn't what Frank calls improv.
Oh, really? What do you consider improv?
What we do, what we are doing right now
is improv, because there's not really any rules. We're just talking.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I see that.
And F following each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And C H A challenging each other.
Definitely. I guess, I mean, that's a lot more interesting than improv. I mean, there's no rules of the game. I mean, maybe that's what I don't like about it. I'm not really sure, but it's never turned me on. Have you seen any movies by Jim Jarmusch?
Yes.
Yeah. He's an interesting director, the way he sets things up and films things, and it's very, there's not really scripts a lot of times. They just give the actors a situation and then film it and give them maybe, you know, this is what your objective, this is what your objective is, and then they throw them all into a scene, and it's very organic and interesting kind of filmmaking.
Like me. That's the way Frank directs his movies,
too.
Oh,
is that right? Oh, nice.
He doesn't script it. He'll come up with a treatment at most.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then when we start to do a scene, he'll do just that. He'll say, this is what I'd like to get. And then lets it go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In fact, one of the... R-E-A reasons I wanted you H-E here is to do a S-C a scene.
To do a scene?
Not like what you, not like what he, not like what he, what Marty did, not that kind of scene.
Not make a big stink, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
But a scene.
What type of scene?
I have a C E R certain L I N a certain line that I want you and E and Erica to H to B you build on.
Take a look at it. Is it scripted or is it just an idea?
I think it's just a line. Yeah. B Y by the way. One is it is she a T T a attractive? Is Erica attractive?
Yeah, she's cute. She seems like a lovely girl. I don't know her, but
S-E sexy? Would you say she's sexy?
Would I say she's sexy? I'd have to know her personality more, so I don't really know her. So
can't tell
to
just
say.
By looking.
No,
you'd have to know her more.
Yeah. Do you think she's sexy?
How do she feel? Based on just what you feel from her, how does she feel to you?
I have no idea. It's hard. I don't like to jump to conclusions about people. I don't ever like to make any sort of judgment until I've known someone for quite a long time, so it's hard for me to say.
Maybe you were going for like a first impression or something. you
first
would
impression?
You feel
she seems like a nice person, you know.
Sexy? Based on your first impression?
That's hard to say. I have to give a political answer on that one.
That's hard to say. What? What is sexy?
What is sexy? That's a good question. I don't know. I'm not sure that I know the answer to that one, actually. I think it's different for everybody.
For you?
I think for me, I'm having a hard time defining that right now in my life as to what is sexy and what
How?
Is interesting.
How so?
Just because I'm at a point in my life in regards to women and relationships where I'm reevaluating things and looking at stepping back and trying
life.
To strip away some of the brainwashing and patterns that I've made that I realize are no good. So it's, you know.
Like what?
You know, like going out with crazy women over and over again and people I shouldn't be going out with and making the same mistakes over and over again, basically.
Why did you? Why did you?
I think it's probably a subconscious thing, and I think it's an archetype, subconsciously archetype, where we're seeking out some sort of problem that we have that we're trying to solve, so we attract maybe not necessarily the right person. It's like with girls who, you know, they get beaten when they're little kids, and then they end up going out with guys that beat them, and it's like they're trying to solve this problem. And they're not realizing that that's not the answer. It's like something else. So the subconscious thing is not the thing that you necessarily need. So realizing that pattern in myself, I'm trying to like break that and step out of that, basically.
What is your PRO? What is your problem?
That's a good question. I have a lot of problems. I don't know where to start, actually.
S-E... E-C, this is our real, this is real improv.
Mm-hmm, it is, indeed.
How, what are your problems?
Like I said, I don't really know. I don't really know. In regards to women, it's probably my mother, because she's crazy. Mm. So I've realized that, and I've realized the pattern. So that's part of it, you know. My other problems, I don't know. You're a good psychologist, so keep asking.
Yes. What? You about you as... Well, Frank did relationship counseling for years in the 70s.
He
always says he's flexible, so whatever kind of people are into, that's what he calls what he's doing. So in the 70s, it was during a period where everybody was into, like, me, you know. And so there was a lot of wanting to be psychoanalyzed and stuff. So Frank started doing relationship counseling. And he worked, like, 8 to 10 hours a day, 5 days a week. And... created a community of people basically out of that, because he was also doing workshops at the same time. So people would start combining. So the people that he was doing relationship counseling, he'd say, bring your other person in, because I can't just do relationship counseling with just you.
Right, like a marriage counselor type, type kind of
and
thing.
And then he would invite them to be in his workshop, his weekly workshop. So then you get all these people that are doing relationship counseling with him all in the one workshop, and people started to move in with each other. And in the end, we had like, I don't know, 3 or 4 households of 30 people total.
Wow.
But he was very good at it. He was very good at it. Yeah. S. So. R. So the. S. C. E. The scene is. A. G. U. A guy. Is T A talking to A woman played by Erica, I guess. Yeah. She is a P R O professor, professor, professional, professional, W O. She's a professional woman. E. Erica is the, what she is in real life. In real life, Erica is the director of enrichment at a large retirement home,
mm-hmm.
which means she's in charge of, you know, people having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
We could you use that A as the C O N T E, the context, her real job and her real profession.
Mm-hmm.
You could be C O M coming in to the retirement home. A, maybe to get H I hired.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe to C H E, check it out for your mother or father or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But and this is the K I, this is the killer. At some point, U S T A, you start T A R T, you start at some point, you start T E telling her what or how you W A I waited for A U N A T T R U N A T T R unattractive. At some point you start telling her how you've waited for an unattractive woman to O P open her legs.
Okay, let me get this straight. What am I doing here?
So Erica is the works at this retirement community, mm-hmm. head of the director of enrichment, and you have come into the community and either to try to get some work there or because you're looking for a retirement community for one of your parents.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick whatever the reason is you're in there. And so that's, you know, that's the frame. You're in there for that. But then at some point, you just start telling her how you've been waiting for an unattractive woman to open her legs.
All right.
I want to E X P explore the C H A R character who would do that.
All right.
Wow, great. So you just start any time.
Okay.
I wonder if Erica should have this on, or rather than having to hold the mic. That might make it. I'll take that mic.
It won't fit.
We can just use this then. Yeah. Your ears aren't big enough. All right. Oh. Obviously, you would not do that. You the person wouldn't do what this character is doing. S, so, D, E, S, C, R, I, describe the character. Now you mean, before you start the improv?
You mean to describe the character?
Yeah.
I can't really do that. I'd rather just go into it and see what happens.
Okay. All right.
All right. Shall we begin?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for meeting with me today. I've took the pleasure of filling out the applications that I came across online, and hope you get a chance to review these and maybe consider me for a position here at the retirement home.
Okay. Were you interested in a full-time position, or you just wanted to come in as an...
We
hire people sometimes for just every once in a while for entertainment or to teach a class, or was this for a regular position?
Well, I got to be honest with you. Right now, I'm unemployed, and I find myself walking around basically 8 hours a day doing absolutely nothing. So part-time, full-time, either of those things would be absolutely great for me. Can you tell me a little more about what the job entails, actually?
Okay, well, our department is the enrichment department, so we oversee all of the activities and classes and fun stuff here at the retirement community.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Our job is to have fun, and enjoy life with the residents. So
let me ask you this: do you have any? Do you have a lot of unattractive women that work here? I'm sorry.
Well,
say anything.
No.
I apologize. You know, it's just that. Well, I really shouldn't say anything. I mean, well, you seem like a nice person. Can I tell you something?
Yeah. Okay.
You know, when I'm walking around, I'm oftentimes thinking about how much I'd like to see an unattractive woman spread her legs.
Really?
Okay, I shouldn't have said anything.
So,
I'm not going to get...
Tell me more about that.
Maybe I shouldn't have said anything. I just... Yeah. Look, you have my number, and I should really be going.
Hold on.
Would you Really? Say, tell me more about that. How did the C character F feel?
Strange and funny, which is usually the way I like to play things when I'm just kind of doing things off the top of my head. You know? Kind of like the character. I mean, whatever the character is, there's always like a funny element to characters, you know? Always, no matter how bizarre they are, I think. That's kind of the way I see things. So when I play things, that's usually how I play them.
How? B? How bizarre? B-I? How big is he physically?
And how so?
Like physically, like, you know, how big of a person is this character?
I didn't think about it, but not very big. Probably a meekish, sort of average type guy.
How did it feel to Erica's character to have somebody say that to her?
Well, I think it was I think I just didn't even know what to do with it. I think I just didn't even know quite what to, you know, how does that fit into working here, or yeah.
Tell the background to that. Oh no, what, me? What about me? A, how did it feel to me to have somebody say something like that? Yeah, because I found myself wondering, what would I say if you said that to me?
Mm-hmm.
T, try. all right, yeah, see what happens.
Let me do the scene again?
Well, from the beginning? From the beginning? Yeah, okay, go ahead. So am I the director of enrichment? Am I the director? All right.
Okay, let me think about this. Okay. Shall I start?
Yeah.
Okay, walking. Hello there. Nice to meet you. I'm here to apply for the job that I came across in the paper. Is that position still available?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay. Could you tell me a little bit about what the job entails?
Well, it would involve you working with people pretty one-on-one, fairly intimately. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to be someone who enjoys people mm-hmm. and enjoys connecting with people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it requires, you have to give a lot. So it's not going to be a job you can just walk through and collect a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to want it more than just that. Does that seem like something you would want?
It sounds interesting. What are the hours like?
It's an 8-hour, 5-day-a-week job.
Ooh, I don't know if I like the sound of that. Do you have a lot of ugly women working here, unattractive?
Why do you ask that?
Well, one of the things that I, you know, I walk around a lot of times and I'm just always thinking about an unattractive woman spreading her legs in front of me.
Well, I find that interesting that you would feel that this is the appropriate time to share that with me. And my inclination would be this job is not for you.
But there are some ugly women that work here, correct?
I think that your job interview has just ended.
I shouldn't have said that.
Right, you're right.
All right. Well, okay. Thank you for your time.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, this R really happened.
This really happened?
Well, yes, this is the description of it. It just so happened that one of our extended family was there and heard this whole interaction.
Mm-hmm.
We have a number of shows on Berkeley's Public Access channel. Mm-hmm. And Corey is the person that physically brings the tapes and the DVDs into the office. So he just happened to be in there the other day when this conversation happened.
I see.
Today at BCM, which is the name of the organization that runs Berkeley's Public Access Channel, Corey was there to drop off our show, Best of Frank Moore's Unlimited Possibilities, and Catherine, who is the director of BCM, was there trading. She asked what we had been up to, and Corey told her about the new series at Burnt Ramen, Going Deep to the Core. She liked the sound of it. Corey asked her if she knew that Frank was running for president. She said she didn't know that. She did know that, but couldn't remember how. Corey gave her the Frank Moore for President URL. She typed it in, but BCM's computers are all on a content restriction. So it turned up adult language or something like that and wouldn't show the page. When she went to type in aeroplay.com, that's Frank's website, she laughed at the specificity of the category for why Aeroplay was blocked also, adult body art. She said, by the way, she found out that the Berkeley High School, which BCM's offices are attached to, blocks adult, gay, bi, and transgender content on their computer servers. As Corey was heading out, this big, older, white tub of a guy with a white beard came in, put his meaty hands on the counter, and asked Catherine if this was the station office for Channel 28. She said it was. Well, he was there to talk about a show that he has been seeing for what seems like years on Channel 28, playing at night, with this man in a wheelchair, pointing laboriously at some kind of computer pad with buttons, and a young woman is there with him, sometimes clothed, sometimes naked. And his main complaint was that it was the most dull, monotonous, meaningless, vacuous thing he had ever seen. How could Channel 28, BTV, put this kind of show on? Was there really nothing else that they could play that they had to play this? Why were not they more selective? You had to wait 30 seconds between each letter Frank pointed to. C. A. T. At some point, he said that the young woman was not even that attractive. And then at another point, he said he kept waiting for her to move her leg a little so he could see something. Like, what is the point otherwise? He couldn't make any sense out of the show whatsoever. There did not seem to be any meaning to it at all. So why were they allowing this to be on the air? At some point, Corey said he knew what show the guy was talking about, Deep Core Magic, and that he actually liked it a lot and got a lot out of watching it. The guy had no idea that Corey had anything to do with Frank. The guy asked what he got out of it. Corey said that Frank and the young woman, Erica, talked a lot about relationships in a very deep way and about being close to others, and he got a lot out of these conversations and from the show in general. The guy seemed to say then that this was the reason why you have to let shows like this air, let someone like Frank do his shows, because some people will appreciate it, but he couldn't see how. And then almost in the same breath that said that he didn't think it was censorship to be selective and choose not to air a show that was just plain dumb. It would be different if they didn't show up because of sex or nudity. That would be censorship. He didn't have any problem with nudity, etc., but it just had no redeeming meaning at all caps. And she doesn't even write down what he is pointing out on that board. She just repeats it. Now, he said, compare it with another show that is on late at night and has some nudity as well, the one with the doctor, kind of like a Dr. Ruth format, but not really like Dr. Ruth. He meant the Dr. Susan Block show. Now, on that show, they were really talking about something. It made sense. You could understand it. He at first did not get that BCM was not producing Frank's shows. He wondered why someone did not just sit down with Frank, write down what he wanted to say before doing the show, not making that the show itself. He said Oprah would never do that. She would have what Frank wanted to say prepared ahead of time and then could have her emotional response to it on the show. What Catherine, this professional woman that he's saying all this to, explained to him, when she explained to him that Frank produced his own shows, that he and a group of us did it, what he still couldn't get a handle on is why BCM would purposefully play such a show like Deep Core Magic. Catherine explained to him more than once that it was a public access channel and first come, first served. He said, "Do you mean to say that if Frank comes in 6 times with his shows and only one other person comes in with their one show, that Frank will be on with his 6 shows and that person will be on with their one show?" Catherine said, "Yes." It was hard for him to get this point. Why was Frank on so much? Catherine said that we were very good, and she didn't mean that as a personal opinion of hers about our shows in terms of whether she liked the content or not, but that we were diligent and good producers, always got our shows in on time, etc. That's why we are on so much. Finally, he said, "Well, then I want my own show where I critique all the other shows on BTV." Catherine said, "Okay, sure."
Interesting.
Yeah. We can not see our E create that kind of thing. We couldn't make
right,
something
you can't
like
make
that
up. That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
Yep.
It would be over the top.
Mm-hmm.
If you made
It'd
something
be unbelievable
like that.
Over the top. Yep. It's true.
But the F, the C, O, N, the content, the C-O-N-T, context of what, the of how he, you mean the fact that he was in, no, I'm not sure what you mean. That he was talking to Catherine. That's the part that really got us, because she's like a woman. She's a professional woman. She's the head of this station.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he's talking to a barman
right.
or somebody,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, would still be outrageous. But, you know, if somebody's, like, thinking like that,
mm-hmm.
and stratifying,
mm-hmm.
like, people, this is a professional woman, and he's telling her he's waiting. He wants to see an unattractive woman spread her legs. You
right.
know, and we're thinking, wow, you know, that seems pretty out there to say something like that to her. Just walk in off the street and say something.
Well, he
like
probably
her.
Talks like that all the time, so it's
right.
probably not a big, you know, he probably
right.
doesn't even think that. If people don't react to it and say anything and call him on it, then more than likely he's going to keep doing it. And
Right.
You know, people that are unaware tend to do things like that.
She, he, would, could, be, a, c, u, c, h, a, character. He could be a character in a P L a play.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. Definitely. Get a bunch of crazy characters together, put them in one setting, see what happens.
I H O hope he does his own show.
That would be interesting, right?
We'd watch
I wonder what the guy does, or who he is, really.
That was why I had you play the scene to try to flesh out what kind of person
I don't think he's that type of character that I played. He sounds a lot different now that I heard the story. A lot different, so.
He might not be the kind of guy coming in for it. How so?
Well, I don't think he doesn't sound like a very endearing character. You know, I like to make characters somewhat endearing. That kind of sounds like just totally blatant, like, idiot, basically. Although those characters have their place, too. If you juxtapose it with somebody else, you can show, like, the true nature of people. But I personally don't like characters like that, especially in real life.
How did you get into acting?
Pretty much ever since I was a little kid, me and my friends would hang out and make up stories and film things. And then when I got to high school, I met my best friend that I've been friends with for a long time now. I started doing theater and got into it more and more, and then it just escalated from there. And when I got out of high school, I got an agent and started doing things professionally, and then I did some stand-up comedy, and then I did this screenplay stuff now, and it's just always been a kind of a natural thing, interest for me.
Do you W S T still L M A make your O your own films?
I've got one script right now with a couple actors, and I'm trying to find a crew to film it, and it's a short film, but yeah, I'm still doing that stuff. Still trying to get my full-length screenplays produced too, but that's very difficult. I've had some agents look at things. I've had this one producer in Santa Cruz looking at it, but I haven't heard back yet, so it's a very difficult business. Like my friend Marty, you know, he's been doing this for 20 years and has written several original scripts and has never sold a screenplay. So it's just a very tough business, and it takes a little bit of luck too. So
that is why I do my own that's why we do our own, like we like Frank will write it, we'll film it, we'll edit it, we do everything.
Cool.
Yeah.
Short films, full length type
Both. Yeah. The last feature length we did, Feisto. We have the entire thing up on the website, so people can watch it from front. We have two like narrative full-length movies that we've done.
And did you just show them online, or do you guys ever submit them to any kind of film festivals at
both.
All? Or,
yeah, Out of Isolation, the first full-length one narrative thing we did, showed around a lot because, well, it's a story about a guy who's disabled, who's been institutionalized his whole life, and the whole thing takes place with him naked on his bed in his room, and this new physical therapist who comes in and out every day, and she's young and wants to kind of break this guy out of, you know, and so in the end they develop a relationship, and it's called Out of Isolation, but it's really, you think it's about him, but it's really about her as much, breaking out of isolation. And they form a relationship, eventually becomes a sexual relationship. She freaks out. It's like, I'm not supposed to be in a relationship with a guy like you, you know. And the kind of the climax of it is when Frank plays the character in the movie. When his character has nothing to lose and just starts kind of wailing one day when she's kind of in on her nurse's thing, and she just kind of breaks down, and that's like the end of the movie. So because it showed like at schools and festivals like that, because like the whole like disability thing was of interest to people. And then Feisto, we actually showed a kind of a fake film festival, the New York International
Film and Video Festival,
which screens in New York and L.A. And that was actually really fun for us. You know, we showed it in theaters in both places. We went to both screenings. We knew it was a scam. You know, it was one of those things where you pay to be in the festival, and you're supposed to have, like, make all these contacts.
Right.
We knew that it was a scam, but we had someone that was willing to put the money up for us.
And I'm sure it was fun. So.
It was really fun. It was really fun. I think if you went in there, like, believing their spiel,
it would be a bummer. Right.
You know, but we had a really good time with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, got to see our movie on the big screen.
Yeah.
You know, so that was fun. Both in LA and New York, right?
Yeah.
So we went to both. They do cool. every year. They do cool. it in both cities.
It kind of reminded me of Harold and Maude, most of the theme of the script in a way, or like the underlying. Have you seen that movie, Harold and Maude?
Oh yeah, sure. Out of Isolation.
It kind of reminds me in ways some similar things going on.
Right.
Possibly, I haven't seen
right.
it, but from what you told
right.
me. So.
Yeah. And Feisto, the one that we showed at the festivals, was a completely different one. That was the one where Frank plays a creature from another place. And
another planet?
It could be another planet. It could be another something, but he's not from here. And he hooks up with this fashion designer, babe, kind of. She, F, I, finds him right after he lands here. He's like, we shot this one scene in Tilden Park. And so Frank's character is completely shaved. He has no hair. And when she first finds him, we body painted his entire body. And then, you know, he eventually, so she kind of like sits down with him, but he sheds, he's kind of trying to kind of look more like her. So he sheds all the colors and in an effort to look more like her and add some hair. So we had, you know, we shot it backwards. So in the end, he has all his hair and everything. And it's about the impact that, so she ends up bringing him home with her. You know, she brings this guy home with her and gets a wheelchair to put him in because he can't quite get the sitting up and standing up and talking thing right. And it's about the impact. Well, the impact her having this relationship with this character, this guy, has on the rest of her life, because he doesn't know any of the social conventions or the social taboos. So he's always breaking them. And that brings life to her. She had been stuck in her design stuff.
Right.
She couldn't, nothing's working. All of a sudden, she's like inspired, and everybody around her is like, whatever's going on, they're encouraging it because it's working. And it's about the impact that he really and then has on her extended family through the changes in her.
Sounds interesting. I have a script, actually, a comedy that I'm working on with, there's aliens in it, and the aliens actually come down.
I am available.
Well, the thing is, the aliens come down, and part of it is the FBI is chasing them. It's really kind of a wacky comedy, but the aliens, since they're not from here, they're like afraid of everybody, but they want to blend in, so that in every scene we see the aliens, like, they dress up in different ways to try to blend in, but they end up standing totally out. Like, you know, they go into a 7-Eleven in one scene and they're dressed all in turbans and white robes. In another scene, they're dressed up like Mexicans with sombreros and stuff. So they're trying to blend in, but they're doing the stereotype so horribly that they just stick out like a sore thumb. It's kind of funny.
D A M Damn, T, H, those, F, I, N, E, fine, D, E, T, details. Oh, for them. Damn those fine details.
Exactly.
They're not quite getting
right.
the details.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What should I? What should I ask you?
That's a good question. How do you feel about 9/11? Because I'd like to talk a little bit about that. And actually, the other thing I'd like to talk about, too, is the Net Neutrality Act that Congress is wanting to come up with and pass. And I don't know if you're too familiar with the Net Neutrality Act. And it's very interesting. It's actually, what it's going to do is it's really going to eliminate a lot of the information on the Internet for people to get to. Mm-hmm. And it's going to allow corporations basically to pay for positioning on the websites. Mm-hmm. So the way the things are indexed it's really not a good thing. And people really need to stand up and fight that, because the information right now on the Internet is one of the only real ways to get alternative information. You know, the media right now, you have the big three, and it's like you can't get any free press. So the Internet is like our only way of getting a lot of this information. So they want to put the kibosh on that. And it's important that people look into it, the Net Neutrality Act.
That is what lover is all about.
Mm-hmm.
The open to everybody. Everybody mm-hmm. is equal at lover. When people, is that what you mean? It's like how do you mean it? The and we exp expose. We expose things like that. Mm-hmm. Is that what you mean? We are you run N E new S news. Right. We run our Lover Alternative News program on Lover, lover.com, which this is. We have news 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it's all alternative news mm-hmm. programs to mm-hmm. talk about those kinds of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then lover.org is like a resource place with links to mm-hmm. places and mm-hmm. videos and mm-hmm. you know, people mm-hmm. that are doing things like that.
And you've probably seen Loose Change. Mm-hmm. You've all seen
We've
Loose
played
Change.
It on
yeah,
Lover.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very important video for people to look at, I think, that haven't seen it.
L. I. H, A, I had, C, A, R, O, Carol
Brie
on the show. She's really been very active in exposing the truth about 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
She's local. In mm-hmm. Palo Alto or something. She does this. I think she has this thing that happens yearly. It's like a
she's
conference.
In Felton. She's from Felton?
I'm not sure. She's like, I think, around Palo Alto.
Oh, Palo Alto. Okay, because it sounds familiar. Someone who actually stopped them from passing the water. They wanted to sell the water rights there in Ben Lomond. I think that might have been Carol that fought that. I'm not sure, but it could be.
But she organizes that yearly event that happens in San Francisco, in an international event where she brings people in to talk about 9/11 and whatever information.
Mm-hmm.
But she was on here years ago mm-hmm. at the beginning of that mm-hmm. when even places like Democracy Now! Weren't
right.
really playing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to talk about it.
Right.
She was there then. K. P. KPFA.
Mm-hmm.
Still won't talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think people are terrified because nobody wants to get burned, you know. I mean, it's somebody that's going to stand up in the media if they're going to tell the truth about it or raise questions, they're going to get burned. I mean, I can only think of one, you know, Charlie Sheen came out and talked about 9/11 on, I can't remember the name of the website. And then he came out about it, and then he was interviewed once on Fox News, and he was basically ridiculed. And then none of the networks ever talked about it again. But he actually came out and said, you know, there are serious issues with the 9/11 Commission. And he pointed out, you know, facts about, you know, Building 7 that came down due to fire. And that two and the two towers come down due to fire too. It's like, well, a building that's made out of a steel structure does not collapse due to fire. I mean, just the physics of a lot of the things too. So, but nobody in the media is coming out and I know there's people that know about these things, but nobody's willing to step up and get burned because they're terrified. And someone's going to have to do it eventually. I mean,
we R I R U. We run. P R O. Programs like D, no, S T E Stephen?
Stepping Out of Babylon.
Oh, Stepping Out of Babylon, which is a half-hour program that produced by a woman who was from Berkeley and now has moved to Oregon. But it's she produces it herself. It played on KPFA for a while, but it plays on Lover all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They booted her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was an eye-opener for her, because that was kind of an aspiration to get it on KPFA. And
right.
I think she gets on KPFA and it's not... They were pretty lame ass, and she realized, huh?
Yeah.
But she interviews people all the time, talk various people from all the different angles about that 9/11. Okay, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
E. Kelly Ramirez, also involved with KPFA, but as an independent, has what's the name of that dude that what's the main guy?
Mike
Rupert.
Yeah.
Who, he's been the one, he wrote a book about it right at the beginning, and he speaks all over the country about it. He's an ex-LA detective. And he really, he deals with it as a detective.
Right.
And so he's been making the case really from the beginning that it's all bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So Kelly had him on many times on her independent program. And all of that stuff has been playing on Lover, really, from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
BTV. And BTV, the Berkeley Public Access Channel, that this will be on.
Mm-hmm.
And that show we talked about earlier. We do a lot of specials on that. So whenever somebody gives us a tape or something that we think would be good to have on BTV, we'll produce it for BTV and sponsor it as a special. So we've done a number of things on BTV about 9/11 and other things. W H I which is why they don't, why they want to get rid of public access to and the internet.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, definitely. They want to silence anybody that has sort of a different opinion because they're fascist Nazis, basically.
Right. I mean, because at this point, anybody like us, I mean, we can put all this stuff on and everybody has equal access to it.
Right.
And we have a very popular website. And,
right.
You know, a lot of people have watched this stuff just on our website.
Right.
And, you know, who are we? You know, we don't have a lot of money, you know, but we can put that stuff out. And we don't see a care about being burned.
That's key, right?
That's right.
That's key.
Yep.
Well, most people that are speaking out against it, they probably figure that they're on the list, you know. I'm sure that there's a list, and I mean, I'm sure I'm on the list. I mean, I've sent out so many political letters, I can't believe it. And my friend Marty too, but it's like, you know, you have to do it. I mean, the truth is the truth. You can't just hide. I mean, what's the point of that? If you know what's going on, you have to express it and tell other people about it and not be afraid, regardless of whatever happens down the line, basically.
I and if you don't see a, if you don't care about being burned, there is not much they can do.
That's true, right. Well, the whole idea is that, you know, they've got people so brainwashed with religion and fear that it's like, if you say to somebody, if you express what you really think's gone on, it basically challenges an emotional thing in them, so they react emotionally. They don't want to look at it, and then they freak out on you. I can remember I was in Vegas a couple of years ago, and I was sitting down at the bar, And this guy came up and he was sitting next to me, and I started talking, and he started talking about politics or something, and I started talking about 9/11. And the guy was really friendly with me and everything, you know. And then about, like, you know, I started going off about 9/11 and what I thought really is happening and the questions I had and this, that, and the other thing. And by the time I got done talking, 10 or 15 minutes later, I look over at the guy, he looks at me, and he just gets up and leaves. So he basically probably thought I was a nutcase, you know what I mean? He was like, the look on his face was just like, what in the heck are you talking about? It just kind of blew his reality.
Well, he said he probably thought you were a nutcase. Frank said, well.
Well, maybe, I guess, I don't know. But I mean, even when I talk to people who are...
B-E-S-I, beside that, besides that, what does that mean?
Besides the fact that you're a nutcase.
Besides the fact that I'm crazy.
I have interviewed a lot of people who EXPO expose things.
Mm-hmm.
In on one L E level, one level, they O F often C R. It seemed kind of wacky. On one level, they seem kind of wacky.
Right.
But.
Well, you have to be kind of wacky if you're living on this planet. I call it the idiot planet.
But they. D. I. Dig, but they dig. They dig, you know, beyond just like the surface stuff. Is that what you mean? They're willing and they do dig, and so they're the ones doing the kind of work that exposes information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Like that S C I E
Scientist.
Oh, yeah. She. Right. What about her? Well, she's an interesting person. I mean, I don't know if I can get the details right on this, but she is a scientist. She's a woman. She's a scientist. Smart. Had a job.
Livermore Lab.
At Livermore Lab. Mm-hmm. And what was it that she exposed there? Do you remember the details of that, Frank? You're probably the only one that does. There was some information that others knew, but she was the one that spoke out about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, her life became in jeopardy. I mean, it was like she was physically in danger and, you know, lost her credibility in the scientific community and all that stuff.
It's all about the talk, you know, like we've been exposed to radioactive stuff in the air, like all the stuff that they've kind of covered up and, you know, they've fraudulently doctored tests and all kinds of things, but there was ever since the Manhattan Project, there's been a lot of, you know, stuff released into the atmosphere that's, you know, that we're all breathing now.
Mm-hmm. But she had, like, specific. She could tell you exactly what it was and when it happened.
And
and she knew what she was talking about. Mm-hmm. So she couldn't be discounted on that level.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she is a W-O-R world T. O top E expert in her field. Mm-hmm. She is the expert in her field. So
she's a
geologist. She's a geologist. So she's like brought all over the world mm-hmm. to speak on this subject. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then she's the one that's saying all this stuff.
Exactly, right.
Yeah. Mm. But one on, but no. Is it one, but on A? O, other level, it, she, F, E, feels like A, P, A, paranoid. Mm. Right, that's kind of, I mean, it's almost. Right, I mean, it's almost like you kind of step through some membrane in the way
she
it looks
paranoid.
On the other. No, she appears as
paranoid. Oh, she
paranoid.
Appears paranoid.
That's the way she appears.
Right.
She's just some paranoid nutcase.
Right, right, right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of like makes it so that the information she's actually giving you somehow gets screened out
mm-hmm.
because that's kind of like paranoid, paranoid.
Right.
Whereas if you don't do that and you just listen to her, you know, obviously she knows what she's talking
right,
about.
Right, right.
But
well, she probably is paranoid, too, so it's probably a subconscious thing that it's right. like... I mean, if you knew that much information, you would be paranoid,
she knows her
I
life
would
is
think.
In danger.
Right, right,
yeah.
exactly.
She has so many specific stories of how
mm-hmm.
her life has been in danger. They, T, took her identity, wasn't it? Her K?
Her kid.
Her, they took her kid, right,
uh-huh.
at one point.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Well, do you know much about Hunter S. Thompson and what happened with him? And
they don't. They don't.
The
oh, but tell the audience, right?
Oh
tell
well, the,
audience,
thing
right.
is, the thing is,
they.
The thing is that Hunter S. Thompson was working on a book exposing 9/11, and he did that interview, which is on Loose Change at the beginning of the film. And then, you know, it turns out that he committed suicide, which is total horseshit. Mm. And people that have known him said he would never kill himself. He was working on this book. And then if you look and you research the two articles that came out in the different newspapers, and I believe one was New York Times, one came out in the local paper where he lives, and they were two different, totally different stories. So if you look at it, it makes sense. I personally think if you look at the information that he was killed, because he was going to write this book on 9/11 and expose it. And if he were to write a book on it and have it published, he's the kind of person that is well known enough where it would make a huge impact. It's not like some writer that most people don't know. It's Hunter S. Thompson. It would be huge. So I personally think he was killed. And I think that other people that have information are afraid, as she probably is. I mean, to speak out about it is great. But I think a lot of people know enough to know that if they speak out, they could be killed. I mean, it depends on the forum, too. I mean, if you look at, like, Cindy Sheehan, I think they'd love to take someone like her out, except the problem is she has so much press all the time. So it's harder to kill somebody that's in the press all the time because it'll be looked at. It'll add more press to it. So it's all a chess game in a way, unfortunately. So, and these people, I don't know, it's really disturbing what's going on. And how do you eliminate it, and what is the root cause? You know, I think it's corporations, and I think it's a small percentage of people that are running things, and they need to be taken. They need to be somehow. We need to take back what is ours, the democracy, freedom, and actually start helping people out and not exploiting
you.
People.
You
vote for Frank.
Vote for Frank.
Vote for Frank.
Frank Moore.
All right.
For president08.com to read Frank's platform. Yes. That is always what, how they get, how they do. That is always how they do it. And it is G, it is V, very, S, M, S, N, sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
It S T E E seeps in to your B brain. Sort of like the misinformation.
The misinformation.
See,
the,
it's very sneaky. It seeps into your brain without you even really realizing it. Even if you are me, even somebody like you, you find yourself with misinformation seeping into your brain. L E A R Leary. What about Leary? You mean when we met him? No, there's something about Leary. Something you thought about him? What was that? F L A Flake? Oh, you thought he was a flake. At a certain point, you thought he was a flake. You bought it. Because that was Timothy Leary.
Mm-hmm.
That at a certain point in the... Well, I mean, they presented him as a flake.
Uh-huh.
And you found yourself, without even realizing it, believing that that was true.
Mm-hmm.
S-H-A... Shallow, that he was shallow, believing that that was true about him, that he was shallow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, did, I did not even know I thought that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I met him. And that's when that all came to the surface, that mm-hmm. you realized that you had this idea about him that you didn't realize you had, and he certainly wasn't that way at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is L M O R more E effective. That sneaky seeping thing. Then K-I killing.
That's more sneaky than killing?
No, it's more effective.
More
than
effective
killing,
than killing.
To just, you know, to retaliate by that sneaky misinformation that seeps into people's brains. So it's a way to discount.
That's
just
true.
Discount them.
Right, exactly. Discredit them.
Yeah.
Yep, that's true. But it's also to perpetuate whatever their agenda is, too. Be it, and I don't, and I'm not saying that I know what it is, but the fact you have to discredit people and bend people's minds is because you're trying to keep a model or keep something going that you have a vested interest in, which I think is what's happening, which is happening in Iraq and otherwise, you know. It's like, why are we really there?
I T A I talk about the Combine P L Combine plot. Well, Frank, well, he used back, like when I first met him, it was like the mid 70s, he was talking about the Combine plot, and he would have me like tell people what he thought. People would be kind of looking at me like that. It was basically everything that people just kind of assume now. But he would talk about it in terms of, there's the book One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I don't know if you ever read that. But you know, the one guy talks about how we're all like, they have a wire in all of our brains, and so if you say something they don't want you to say, you get this kind of zap.
Yeah, right.
And so Frank's kind of got the idea from that, and the idea is that there is this thing that runs through all of us, and when you think outside the box at all, you get this jolt that kind of keeps you in a certain way of thinking, and that's why everybody is like so that way. R E M O remote control. It's a remote control kind of thing. So you can't see it.
Right.
You don't see a source. It's just like all remote.
Well, I think it's just playing on fear. We have to program people to be afraid all the time. So, and if you have an idea that's different from what I think to be true, it scares me, so I react emotionally like I was talking about before. It's like if you talk to somebody about 9/11 that, let's say they're a fundamentalist Christian and they support Bush and this and the other thing, you can show them the facts, but once you start to show it to them, they will freak out and they will not have any of it because it terrifies them.
Like your B-O. D.
Like my bodyguard?
Right.
Yeah, Marty's a great guy, and he's very political. Like I said, there's some situations where he gets put off, and he's very sensitive. But when it comes to politics and what's going on with the world, he's actually very concerned and actually does quite a bit. So, but he's got his own issues, like we all do. So.
Is that a wrap? Yeah. Okay. You should say your name.
Oh, my name is Billy. That. Billy Army. And yeah, well, it was a pleasure being here. Thank you for having me.
Is that your real name, Billy Army?
That's my real name.
Yeah. Exactly. I like to make up people's names, to just kind of for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I said I was afraid to make up a name for you because I was afraid that I was afraid that I'd forget which one was the made up name and which one was the real name, because Billy Army seemed like a made up name.
That's
so I was
my real
afraid
name.
That I would forget. Yeah. Do you have a website or anything?
My website is billyarmy.com, and my last name is A R M I. Yep.
Okay. Well, goodbye, everybody.